The next morning, we had breakfast with Elaine. Daniel spent a couple of hours doing research on the internet while I helped his aunt with her morning chores. We said goodbye to Elaine and Ratface around 10:30 and headed toward Bob's brother Leonard's place. Leonard and Bob hadn't spoken in years. I wasn't even sure what their original quarrel had been over, but Bob never spoke of Leonard unless he called him a bad name. We had gone to see Daphne one Christmas, but she and Bob got into an argument because she had decided to get one of those satellite dishes back when they first came out, the big kind that looked like a bowl on a pole. She was so excited about being able to watch programs that she hadn't seen in years on the regular television networks. Bob had told her that those satellite dishes were the devil, and the CIA was probably listening in on them right then. She'd gotten so mad that she told him to call her on Christmas henceforth, because although he was her brother and she was obliged to care about him, she was not obliged to tolerate insanity in her home. "Did anyone call Daphne and Leonard?" I asked. "You know, to tell them Bob's missing?" "Someone from my office called," he said. "Not only that, the detective has contacted them too." Daniel had found Leonard's address using an online people finder program, but when I tried to find the road sign, we couldn't, so we stopped at a filling station to ask for directions. That was something that Bob would never do. First, it was below his dignity, he would say, and second, he would ask me how I could trust some stranger not to send me off somewhere and get me killed. Daniel, however, had no problems with walking right up to anybody, flashing that warm smile and asking if they knew where such and such a place was at. At this particular station, he went in, and while I got us something cold to drink from the cooler, he asked the guy behind the counter if he knew where Leonard McQuaid's junkyard was. "Turn right out yonder in front of the store," the guy said. "Then you'll come up to a light about a quarter of a mile up the road, then turn left. Take that road out a piece, and maybe 4 or 5 miles. Then you'll see where that there sign used to be, but it ain't there no more on account of Morris Nelson's boy stole it. Don't tell nobody, though. He's a good boy, and I wouldn't want him to get sent up or nothing. But anyway, when you see that there iron pole with no sign on it standing there beside Jed Henson's tractor that ain't been moved in 20 years, then you're on the right road. You take that there road about a mile and a half, and you come up on the junkyard. Old Leonard McQuaid, he runs that junkyard, and he lives past it, and that there trailer with all them there pie pans nailed to it." "Thanks," Daniel said. Back outside, Daniel said, "I think I can find this thing." We were headed to the truck when his cell phone rang. "Hello?" I heard him say as I climbed into the truck. He didn't get in, though. I turned by instinct. There he stood, stone still in the same spot he had been. His face told me that something was wrong. He looked like he had been punched in the stomach. I jumped out and went around the truck. "Daniel, you all right?" "No, that can't be," he said. I could hear panic in his voice, a vibrato that had never been there before. Was it about Bob? I was terrified to move, to breathe. What had happened? Had Bob been found dead? "How?" he said. He ran his hand through his hair and went around in a circle. "Things like that don't just happen." His voice cracked. He was tearing up. Then he closed his phone, and as if someone had shot his legs right out from under him, he fell straight down to the concrete parking lot, cell phone clutched in his hand. "Daniel!" I hollered and ran to him. "No!" he screamed and flung his phone across the parking lot, breaking it into 100 pieces. He bent over, holding himself as in great pain. "Daniel!" I kept saying. "Daniel, what is it?" But he wouldn't answer me. The only thing real to him in that moment was whatever the person on the other end of the phone had said. I don't know how I knew, but I did. Marion was dead. And as far as Daniel was concerned, he was too. I didn't know what to do, so I put my arms around him. and tried to lift him up. "Come on," I said. "I'll take you to her. Get in the truck. People are walking by and staring at us." "Y'all all right, miss?" an elderly man asked. "You need a doctor or anything?" "Someone has passed away," I said. "Thank you. We'll manage. Come on, Daniel," I whispered. "Let's go to her. I'll drive." I helped him stand. "No, you'll go too slow. I'll drive." I didn't want him to. I could feel his body shaking, feel the clammy cold that had taken hold of him despite the July sun. "Daniel, damn it, I'll drive," he said, and he did. I barely had time to get in and get my seatbelt on before he sped out onto the highway. He drove so fast that I was afraid for our lives at times and amazed that no cops followed us. After we had been on the road about 30 minutes, he spoke. Whether he was talking to me or himself, I didn't know. "It was a piece of candy," he sniffed. "My Marion choked on a piece of candy. Someone left a piece of hard candy fall into her bed, and she choked on it." He nodded as if agreeing with his own thoughts. "My precious baby choked on candy." Tears were streaming down his face, but I said nothing. I wanted to take his pain away, but nothing I said would be any more than a nuisance. He was grieving. I hurt for him. I realized that my nose was running. It was running because I was crying too. Daniel took me with him to the nursing home to finalize the paperwork of Marion's death. It was not by choice so much as it was due to the fact that taking me home would take up extra time. I walked with him to the nurse's station where he spoke with a head nurse and made some phone calls. Then I followed him, at a distance, down the stairs, past the vending machine area, into her room. But I didn't go in. I couldn't. It wasn't right. But as if compelled by some unseen force, I watched through the open door. When he saw her, he froze, staring at her lifeless body. Then he crossed the room and lifted her into his arms. "Oh, Marion, my baby," he said. He kissed her head and her face and her pale lips. "Oh, Marion," he said again, "come back to me." Then he threw himself over her and sobbed. I couldn't watch anymore. My heart felt like it was being ripped out through my esophagus. All my insides churned and tears streamed uncontrollably down my face. In that moment, if it had been possible, I would have traded places with Marion Ransom in order to take away Daniel's pain, but it wasn't possible. The thing he loved most in all of the world was gone, and there was nothing I could do to make it better. Nothing. I watched as the mortician came and discussed arrangements with Daniel. I watched as they took Marion's covered body out on a gurney, and I watched as Daniel walked around her vacant room, touching each of the little animals he had bought for her through the years. He walked over to the window and leaned his head against the pane. I stood in the doorway. I thought he was oblivious to my presence, even after he started talking. "How that candy got in her bed, nobody knows," he said. "Nobody admits to having hard candy in the room. But yet someone, an elderly, a nurse, a CNA, someone let a piece of candy fall out of their pocket and into her bed, and like a baby, she stuck it in her mouth and choked on it." I didn't know what to say. I wasn't sure if he were talking to me or to himself. "You gonna sue or something?" I finally said. He shook his head. "Marion wouldn't want that. She would say that accidents happen and that people aren't perfect." He was quiet for several minutes. Then he hid his face from me completely. "She's not coming back to me. Not ever." He didn't say another word until a nurse came in about half an hour later. "Mr. Ransom," she said. It was the redhead. He wiped his eyes and looked at her. "Yes?" "Would you like to take your wife's things now, or would you like us to pack them for you and give them to you later on in the week?" He studied her for a moment, then turned his attention to the room's decor. "Donate them to the children's hospital. That's what Marion would want." After we left the nursing home, Daniel drove me to Cookies. He didn't talk much on the way. As we pulled into her drive, he said, "Funeral is day after tomorrow. After that, I'll be out of touch for a few days." "You gonna be okay?" I asked. "I don't know," he said. "See you, Razzie." "Bye," I said. I closed the door and he drove away. I felt numb and empty as I watched his black truck disappear over the hill.